Welcome to the podcast of Focus 580, featuring interviews with newsmakers and experts on international affairs and daily life, hosted by David Inge at WILL Radio, Urbana, Illinois. Please support this service by becoming a member and visit us on the web at will.uiuc.edu.
To Focus 580, our morning talk show. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you listening. We're also pleased here to welcome back to the program Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He is on the show once a month on a Monday to talk about home maintenance. And if you have heard the program before, you know the drill. If you are having a problem and you're just not sure how to deal with it, or maybe you're thinking of making some changes, doing some remodeling, and you need some advice, he has a lot of experience in this area, knows a lot about the various parts of the single-family home. So whether it has to do with heating and cooling, insulation, windows, doors, siding, roofs, attics, basements, gutters, any and all of that kind of stuff, you can give us a call. And the phone lines are lighting up here already. So I'll give the phone numbers, 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line, and that one's good anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. Well, it looks like we're almost full and ready to go here.
All right.
Glad to have you with us once again.
Good to be here.
We appreciate it. Well, let's go. First, Urbana, line one. Hello.
Good morning. I was crawling around in my mother's house's crawl space, and I was looking for something not having to do with the heating ducts, but while I was down there, I was noticing that the seams around the heating ducts had had tape put on them years ago, and the tape, of course, wasn't adhering anymore. So I went and looked on the web to see what one was supposed to do about that. I know you're not supposed to use duct tape. It said to use mastic. To clean the surfaces really well and use mastic. Mastic, I presume, is some sort of a glue.
Sort of a caulk.
A caulk, okay. So where does one find this? I've never seen this in my perambulations around hardware stores.
Well, it should be there. Yeah, you can buy them from any of the heating and cooling wholesalers. And that's the current suggested sealant. We've had better luck with the metallic tapes rather than the duct tape. There are some aluminum tapes that have been working pretty well if you don't want to get involved with the mess of the mastic.
Okay. The walls of the crawl space have insulation blown onto them, kind of insulation. Should I also be wrapping the ducts to reduce the amount of heat radiated from the duct surfaces?
Not necessarily. If you've got it insulated around the perimeter, any heat that you lose stays in the crawl space, and it goes up and keeps the floor warm.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, but I wasn't sure.
As long as it's dry, be sure that all the crawl space vents are closed.
Yeah, they are. The plastic has been disturbed when people were down there doing other kinds of work. Tell me again how you're supposed to do the plastic. Do you need to tape the plastic, or how much do you have to overlap?
I'll lap it about 6 inches or something like that. And don't bother to tape it.
Okay.
And run it up the wall a few inches if you can. Now, even if it peels back off, that still will direct any moisture that comes through under the plastic instead of on top.
Okay. Separate question. I know that we often have questions on your show about gutters. And I was at a local lumber yard, not a big box lumber yard, a local independent, long-standing lumber yard, and happened to notice that they had something I hadn't ever seen before. And in cross-section, it's L-shaped, and with part of the L sticking down into the back of the gutter and the other part horizontal. It is made of very loosely felted fibers and is about an inch thick. If you think about the fiber scrubbies that are used, that are sold to strip paint off, well, it's sort of like that, but thicker and with a fabric-y sort of top surface.
Right.
And I hadn't seen anything like that. It was about $2 of a lineal foot, and Tim's comes in 3-foot sections. And I thought, this is interesting. I think I'll ask Hank next time he's on.
They seem to work pretty well. And they keep out many of the smaller particles that get through some of the other systems.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have any problem with that. And $2 a running foot, they're not very difficult to put in, and it's certainly a lot more sensible than some of the ones that are being sold at installed costs of $15 to $18 a foot.
Oh, golly. Well, I had put gutter guard on most of our gutters, which seems to be working pretty well. But the family has a steep-roofed house in Ohio that has the gutter straps, the straps for the gutters over the shingles, and you can't put that sort of thing on. You can't put gutter guard, the aluminum sheeting on over the gutters. It's just not going to work. So I thought I would check into this. Well, thank you very much, because this would be a whole lot easier to install up on a high ladder than the other thing. Thanks a bunch.
All right, thanks for the call. Just real quick, I'm curious, just on general principles, what you think about strap-hung gutters.
Well, generally speaking, these are the half-round gutters that are hung on usually pretty steep roofs.
Mm-hmm.
And if the roof edge is not designed for the other kind of gutter, well, that's about the only thing you can do. I much prefer the cage-style gutters with the hangers, but it all depends on what you have for a fascia board to fasten it to.
Yeah, okay. I guess the thing I always think about with strap-hung gutters is that what you're doing is the purpose of your roof and your shingles is to shed water. So if you go around punching holes in it, I'm thinking, now, isn't this sort of defeating the whole purpose of the system?
Yeah, well, sealing over the nails with some roofing cement is a pretty good idea.
Oh, okay. Well, if you do that, then that should help. All right. Well, let's go on to another caller here. This is Urbana, line 2. Hello.
Hello. Is it my turn?
Yes.
I have two questions. One is, do you need to put a cover on your air conditioner on the outdoor unit during the winter?
Well, if you do, make sure that it is a canvas cover, not a plastic one.
Uh-huh. And how would that benefit the air conditioner? What does it do for it?
It tends to protect it somewhat from the snow and ice sliding off the roof. And that sort of thing. I don't cover mine.
You don't cover yours?
No.
Okay, so I don't really need to do that.
No.
Okay. Well, the second question is about hot water heater. And I'm wondering, I keep hearing every once in a while that you should put one of these insulating blankets around the hot water
heater. How old is it?
The hot water heater is probably, 20 years old, maybe more.
Probably wouldn't hurt to do that. The new ones we don't need to because they're better insulated when they're made.
Uh-huh.
Now, the other question is, when the water heater is running for a while, do you hear it percolate or thump?
No.
Okay. In that case, yes, I would probably put a blanket around it.
So what does that mean if it thumps? It
means there's an accumulation of crud in the bottom.
Oh.
And it's about time to replace the water heater.
Oh, and how often do you usually?
Well, it depends. You see, in Champaign-Urbana, we often find them 30 or so years old. In Mahomet, if you get more than 5 years, you're lucky.
Oh, my gosh.
Because the difference is the way the water is treated.
Uh-huh.
So, and again, in wells, if you have a well rather than a municipal supply, it's considerably less than,
okay.
than the
local. So, go ahead.
No, the local water treatment plants are very good, and water heaters last a long time here.
Okay. So I probably don't need a cover on my air conditioner. I probably do need a insulating cover on my water heater.
Right. Now, if your air conditioner is under the drip edge of the roof, so the snow or ice sliding off it would come on top, putting something across the top of it for physical protection, not wrapping it.
Uh-huh. I see. Okay. Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. Next caller is in Philo, line 3. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
We built a house 2 years ago and put in the double-paned windows, vinyl windows, and I believe they're sealed in gas. Now, one of them has developed water vapor inside the two windows.
Mm-hmm.
What is that indicative of?
It indicates the seal was defective, and it should still be under warranty by the window company, because usually the minimum warranty is 5 years.
All right. that needs to be replaced.
Yes, and there's nothing you can do with it other than replace it.
All right, okay. And also when you said about the water heaters, how, the newer ones don't need the blankets, how new?
Last 5 to 7 years, something like that.
Oh, okay, all right. Well, thank you very much.
All right, very good. Let's go next to someone on the it's just El Paso, Illinois. First time I looked at this, I thought El Paso, Texas? No, El Paso, Illinois. On line 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoy the program. I have a couple of questions about maintaining the septic system.
Mm-hmm.
I've been under the impression that I should not let any bleach enter the system, thinking it may kill some of the bacteria. But also, when we're gone for a few days in the winter, I put recreational vehicle antifreeze. It's usually that pink stuff. And I put that in the drains to protect in case anything froze while we were gone. And then, of course, that gets flushed on into the system. You got any comments on maintaining a system and keeping it functioning and what to avoid putting in it, Hank?
Well, basically, what we don't want is the chemicals that are sold for the recreational vehicle holding tanks, because those will kill things. Otherwise, the nominal amount of bleach that you get from laundry and your RV antifreeze flushed down the toilet and so on should not present a problem. There really isn't any need for additives. I know there are a number of companies that make additives that claim to do wonderful things for your septic tanks, and the government agencies involved with this have not found that any of them are beneficial. There's plenty of bacteria there. We don't need to add it. Now, you should pump your septic tank about every... I don't know. Do you have a garbage disposer?
No.
Okay.
We're very careful.
Yeah, you should have the tank pumped about every 7 to 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
To accumulate the non-digestible material that stays in the bottom.
So are you saying then, Hank, that the small amount that of RV antifreeze that I would put down probably does not hurt, or I should not use any?
No, it doesn't hurt.
Okay, because, you know, it only happens maybe a couple times during the winter when we're
right.
going to be gone for an extended period. And other than that, you know, we don't have any occasion to use that.
Right.
So it's several gallon that would be used, and that's okay then.
Yeah.
I looked closely on the label on the bottle, and I could not find any reference to that.
I don't think that should provide a problem at all.
Okay. Well, thank you much.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let's see where we're going to go next. To back here to Champaign and line number 1. Hello.
Yes. I have a question regarding adhering handicapped grip bars in the bathroom around the tub. Mm-hmm. It is a single unit preformed fiberglass tub and enclosure unit. And there is a space between the wall and the way the fiberglass is formed. So there's a pocket there about an inch wide. And then in the corners, it's kind of rounded so that I can't access a stud to adhere those handicap bars too. Do you have any suggestions or comments?
Well, you can use long screws and go through and hit the stud back there.
But if there's no stud?
Well, there probably is.
Well, there isn't, though. I can't do that because in the corner it's rounded, so
yes.
I can't get my bar back there to adhere to a stud.
Okay, now at the front edge, there should be a vertical stud.
One.
Okay, I would put in the bar vertically there so that you can hang on to it when you're getting in and out of the tub, which is the major thing.
Okay, so you're recommending only doing one grab bar.
If you can. Now, there has to be something back there. You could put one in the back. If somebody has an electronic stud finder,
mm-hmm.
you can find something back there that you can run a long screw into.
Well, I think what about the space between the stud and the fiberglass? Is there going to be a moisture leak there?
No, not necessarily. You just won't pull. You don't pull it because otherwise you'll pull the fiberglass. You'll bend the fiberglass. What we want to do is just fasten it solidly, without bending the fiberglass liner.
Okay, and the areas where you cannot adhere it to a stud, you should not fasten the grab bar, is that correct?
Right, right.
Yeah, so you have to have it into a stud.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you. Let's go next to a caller in Charleston, line number two. Hello.
Good morning. Mm-hmm. I have a question. I was looking at a home built about 20 years ago, ranch style with a ridge vent going completely the length of the house, mm-hmm. but I couldn't observe any stacks coming out of the roof for like the bathroom or the kitchen, etc. The only I saw was a large turbine type of fan that would go with the wind. It was about, I'd say, 15, 20 inches across. I'd never seen like that, and I wondered what your comments were, how that thing vented.
Well, these plumbing vent stacks definitely should go through the roof. They apparently, someone has cut them off in the attic and is depending on the ventilation provided by the turbine to get rid of the moisture. I think that's a mistake. I would say that they should go through the roof.
Okay, that was my call. So, okay, well, thank you then.
All right,
okay.
Thanks. I assume that you would say the same thing about bathroom vents, about kitchen vents, that should all be vented to the outside.
We prefer to go through kitchen vents. Well, many times you can successfully, if you have good ventilation in the attic, you can get by with it. But I really prefer to see them go through the roof or else run over horizontally and out the bottom of the overhang.
Okay. So the thing is you don't want that if there's moisture, and particularly from a bathroom there would be, you don't want to be venting that into your attic.
Right.
Even if you think the attic is well ventilated.
I would avoid it if possible.
Our guest this morning, Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He's on the program monthly, always on a Monday. We talk about home maintenance. And if you have questions, I know he'll do his best to help you out. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Next caller is in Oakwood, and that's line three.
The other week I asked you about what to use for a source of heat in a home that we were going to build in southwestern Wisconsin, and you said ground loop thermal, but what I didn't know at the time was that's unglaciated land, and it's a hard drill going down to the water table. Are you talking about the kind of stuff where you're going to have multiple holes drilled?
Probably no more than two, and
really?
Use a standard well drilling rig.
Okay.
Goes down, and they just drill a well. They don't put a casing in it. They drop a loop of pipe in it and then let the well things cave in around it.
Very good. Thank you.
All right. Well, let's go on here to Champaign, line one. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi. I've been hanging some cabinets, and I know that they put a lot of electrical conduit and pipes and things to follow the stud, and I'm a little bit concerned about poking the screws in willy-nilly, and I'm going to hit a electrical line or a water line or anything. What can I do for precautions?
Well, again, the electronic stud finders will also find conduits.
Uh-huh.
So you can run that along the wall and find out where the stud is and so on. And stud will be an inch and a half across, whereas the conduit will only be three-quarters of an inch.
Oh, be an inch and a half across, okay. So, but also they run along the sides there, so of the studs, I guess. How do you know where to go so you don't hit it?
Well, if it's alongside, you'll get your indication on your stud finder of the two edges of the stud.
Okay. All right. So just trust your stud finder, huh?
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. And let's go next to St. Joe. Line two. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
Hank, I've got several places on the roof where shingle tabs have blown off or... And not so. It's just a tab here, tab there. And I was thinking about just getting some colored shingles and just use some roof adhesive and put a tab in here and a tab in there with the ones that are blown off. And just wondered if that was a problem.
No, that's the logical repair for it. Yeah, hopefully, you can get enough of the one that has blown off so that you can tuck some of the tab under the edge of the shingle above it.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, no, that's the way you fix them.
Great. Okay. Thanks.
All right. And let's see. Thank you very much. We'll go now to Charleston, line four. Hello.
Hi. Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I just have a general question. Girlfriend and I are going to purchase a home in Charleston, but it's an older house built in the late 1800s. Just kind of what are the major things I should be looking at or concerned about before I purchase this house?
Well, I think one of the major things is going to be insulation. It undoubtedly wasn't built with any insulation. The question is, what have they done to it since?
Okay.
Because that's going to have an awful lot to do with the comfort of the house and the operating cost of the house.
Gotcha.
Then you're going to want to be looking at what the condition of the piping, both vent and drain and water supply and so on, what kind of shape that's in, what kind of heating system is in it, how old is the heating system, and how efficient is it?
Okay.
That sort of thing.
Gotcha. And I know a lot of those appliances, like furnace and things like that, were just purchased, I think, last year. New roof, they're putting on new siding, things like that, but more checked up plumbing and insulation, huh?
Right. Well, if they're just putting on siding, hopefully they're blowing insulation into the walls before they're covering it with siding.
Okay. I'll check with them then.
Okay.
All right. Thank you much.
All right. Thank you. And Urbana, back here to Urbana, line number three. Hello.
Hi. How are you today?
Good. Thanks.
Good. Is there a downside to removing a section of gutter on my roof that it's kind of an L shape? The roof is very shallow. The valley that's created is also very shallow and constantly fills with small leaves and debris because I have a honey locust over it. And when the gutters fill up, water tends to then get under the shingles and into the attic. Mm-hmm. So I've just pulled off that section of the gutter and then just let the water drain off the roof.
As long as you have appropriate means of disposing of the water when it goes off the edge of the roof.
Okay, well, we had the house regraded several years ago, and then I've, you know, put stone down where the water drops to avoid it, you know, creating gullies.
Right.
From
and,
that.
As long as you've got the good slope away from it, no, that shouldn't be a problem.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you very much.
All right, well, thank you. Well, lines are all free now. Maybe you've been thinking about calling in, or you tried to call and got a busy signal. You have a question for our guest, Hank Spies. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. I was just thinking about the previous caller who you had this discussion about the insulation. And if you had an existing house and you wanted to add insulation, there are two things you could do. You could go from the outside. You go from the inside. I expect probably most people would say, well, I really don't want to rip off the walls and the inside of the house to get to them.
Right.
Now, you know, depending on what they were and what kind of shape they were in, a lot of other things, you know, maybe you actually would want to do that. Comparing cost-wise, if you were going to do that, is it always still going to be cheaper to have somebody to go from the outside, put some holes in the wall, blow insulation in, and then cover them back over again?
That normally will be less expensive, but much depends on whether you're planning on replacing the inside finish or not, what kind of shape it's in. If it's not in good condition, then you might want to try for the inside. But generally speaking, we do it from the outside.
Yeah. And now, like, you know, for example, I have an old house, and I still actually have some plaster walls in my house and some other walls that were replaced by, I think, actually Masonite. I'm not sure why it is they made a choice like that. But now, I mean, is standard now drywall pretty much going to be the standard for interior walls
for the most
now?
Part, yes. Yes, it will be. And it has the advantage of being pretty much a fire retardant.
Mm-hmm. How hard is that to do for an amateur if you have at least some minimal kind of skills? I guess particularly the thing I'm thinking about is just how difficult is it to get the joints taped and spackled over it so that you get the appearance of a nice smooth wall, even though there are seams between your panels of drywall.
With a little bit of practice, it's not that difficult to do. The spackling has to go on in about three coats.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have to do a little sanding, but yeah, it's not not that bad a job.
Okay.
We see some pretty poor jobs occasionally, and the trouble is some of those have been done by professionals, but it can be done.
All right. Other callers here, we have three. They're all in Champaign, and first is line one. Hello.
Yes, I'm dealing with a house 55 or 60 years old. That has casement windows.
Mm-hmm.
That are made of aluminum, I'm pretty sure. And the panes of glass are held by something that might have been rubber or something rubber-like. And at the corners, these pads have kind of pulled away and left a little hole for the air to come in. And my question is, what is something good to use to fill that hole that will adhere to all three of those materials?
Well, generally speaking, a good urethane caulk will do the job.
Urethane.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, very good. What sort of preparation should one do for that?
Get anything, as much surface, any dirt, scum, corrosion that's accumulated as much off as possible.
Just a matter of scrubbing it with a toothbrush or something? Or
yeah, that would usually do the job.
Okay, no need to use any chemicals or anything?
No.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
All right, thanks. We'll go on to another caller here. This is also Champagne's, line number two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, I live in southwestern Champaign in the Cherry Hill subdivision, and our home built in about 1991. When you look up on the roof, you can see a lot of dark, looks like kind of dark stains, about 3 or 4, maybe 6 or 8 foot ones that kind of go from the peak of the roof downward. Do you know, is that something to be worried about? I've had someone up on the roof before recently making sure all the shingles are intact and in good shape, and they were. But the stains themselves, is it something to be worried about? And also, is there any way to treat those?
Well, it's nothing to worry about.
Okay.
As far as treating was concerned, well, you can spray it with a diluted bleach solution, and that'll probably do it. Basically, it's a fungus that grows up there. There is a special product called Shingle Shield, which is a zinc strip that you tuck under the bottom edge of the top row of shingles, and with the acid rain that we get, it washes enough zinc oxide down to kill off the stuff.
Okay.
But is going to shorten the life of the roof? No, not really. It's just an appearance problem.
And it's due simply to this fungus that appears, is that it?
Right.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Smith.
All right, thank you. And to line three, and this is also Champagne. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
My question concerns venting of plumbing. I have a very old house. The plumbing in the bathroom is vented through the roof. The plumbing, which is one sink in the kitchen, is not vented. What would I need to do to vent that without tearing up my roof?
Well, usually you run a connection pipe across from the vent you have to the one that's coming up from there in the attic.
There's not exactly what you'd call an attic. There's just a space up there.
Well, okay.
With no access to it. I mean, you'd basically have to take a piece of the roof off to get access to there.
Well, usually you take a piece of ceiling off in a closet,
okay,
or something and do that, yeah.
And so the venting for the bathroom is on the west side of the house. The kitchen's on the east side of the house. There's no other way to vent that kitchen rather than...
Well, you go up. You have to put in another vent through the roof then.
But I would have to go through the roof. I mean,
yeah,
there's nothing you can do through a sidewall or...
Well, not really, but there are special vents. The reason we have a vent is to make sure that we can have, when you put something down the trap, we are not sucking the trap dry.
Right.
Okay, there is a special called a Studer valve that can go on there, and you can vent it, and it will only allow air to go in, not out.
Okay.
And I've seen those installed under the sink.
Okay. All right. And presumably any of the plumbing companies in town would know about that.
I would think so. As I say, the manufacturer is Studer Company, and they do make those, and they are approved in the plumbing code, and so that we can get by without a vent.
Okay.
As long as we have this special vent that will only allow airflow in one direction.
So far, it's been about 100 years it's been getting along without it, but I think I'll investigate that. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. We're a little bit past the midpoint here. Just to remind you that our guest is Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He's here monthly. On a Monday, we talk about home maintenance, and questions are certainly welcome. Whatever's on your mind, I know he'll do his best. 333-9455. Here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 800-222-9455. We have someone, I think, from St. Joe. Maybe you wanted to follow up on an earlier call. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
in your conversation, we've been telling you about your drywall. Remind me, I've got several places in the house and in the ceiling and in the corners where there's a separation of the drywall tape from the drywall. And I just wonder if you had a suggestion or recommendations when I go to repaint, how best to correct that problem.
Okay. Is the tape cracked at the joint, or is it just pulling loose from the drywall?
It appears to be pulling loose from the drywall, the edge of the tape. Yeah.
Okay. Probably the only thing you can do with that is to finish the job, pull the tape off, put on new tape, and retape the joint.
Oh, my gosh.
Not the answer you wanted, probably.
No, I was hoping you'd say spackle or something.
Well, you can do that. I mean, you can use the drywall taping compound, and you may end up with a slightly thicker joint there.
Oh, sure.
But, yes, you can do that. But if you want a full-finished joint, then you are going to have to pull it off.
Pull the tape off and stew it over, huh?
Right.
Wonderful. Okay, thanks.
All right. Next, Lafayette, line number four. Hello.
Hello. Do I replace my carbon monoxide detector every year, every 2 years?
I don't think the replacement interval is anywhere near that short. I don't know. I don't know that I've ever seen any predicted life on those things. I know the one that I carry, I've been carrying for a considerable number of years, but it's not the normal residential unit. It's one that I can usually tell if there's been a candle burning in the house in the last 2 hours. I have no clue as to how long you can expect a carbon monoxide detector. I've never seen anything saying you should replace them.
Okay. Main question. I, following your advice during the zero mornings, I looked up in the attic and, yeah, there's frost on the protruding nails. So I guess that means more insulation?
Or more attic ventilation.
There's pretty good ventilation.
Well, there's moisture there. Mm-hmm. So you're not venting it out. If it's you're getting frost, there's a moisture level that's higher than we want to see in there. And that's normally just controlled by ventilation because you're not going to be able to go in. And one of the things you want to be sure of is that you've sealed where the piping goes through the plate for the vents and this sort of thing. Use some foam in a can type thing to seal around any penetrations of that and any penetrations of electrical wires.
What pipes?
Well, the plumbing vent pipes.
Mm-hmm. Vent pipes, okay.
Basically, we want an airtight ceiling.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you.
Thanks. Someone was listening to earlier comments about the Studer valve, mm-hmm. and just wanted to know how you spell that.
I believe it's Studer.
Okay, 1D. All right, very good. Several callers here again. They're all in Champaign, and the next in line is line three. Hello.
Hi there. Mm-hmm. I had a roof put on my house by a local contractor a couple years ago, and they did not run the felt all the way to the drip edge. And they came back, stripped off the bottom foot and a half of the roof, and put a strip of that rubberized storm and ice shield mm-hmm. down, but they did not, they overlapped it on top of the lowest edge of the felt. So in other words, you don't have a shingling effect going up. Mm-hmm. They said, oh, this stuff gets so sticky, it's going to stick to that felt. And I'm thinking, you know, everything needs to overlap going up.
Well, I certainly prefer it that way.
Okay. All right. Well, I just wanted to see if my thinking on that
now,
was correct.
If you're using ice and water shield or one of those peel and seal, mm-hmm. Generally speaking, it will stick well enough you won't have a problem. But it sure would have been nice for them to have tucked that under the edge of the felt.
Yeah, I was thinking since I paid for 30-year shingles, it'd be nice to have a 30-year felt and, you know, a layer underneath that, and I'm sort of doubting that's going to be true. Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Next is line number one, and this is also someone in Champaign. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I was interested, a previous caller, you've been talking about bathroom fans into the attic, and that's the case with our house. We know it's not good, But to correct that, is that a plumbing contractor, an air conditioning HVAC person, or is that a roofing contractor?
Well, it all depends on what you're going to do. It may take a roofing contractor to seal around the hole that you put through the roof, but it would probably be an HVAC man who would do the run the ductwork.
Okay. Excellent. That's what we need to know to get moving.
All right. Okay. Very good.
Thank you very much.
We'll go to Champagne and line number two. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm having a problem with my kitchen sink. It gets stopped up from time to time, and I'd always rent something and get through, but last time I couldn't, and I had a guy in, and he was pulling up mud, and I have a slab home, so it seems like I tried to look up something online about it. I couldn't really find anything. I mean, is this common problem? Can it be repaired? Do I just need to get a plumber in to tell me what's happening?
Probably the latter, because you may be, there could be a crack in the drain line under the slab, in which case you've got a major problem, because you've got to find it and break the slab and fix it.
That's what you have to do?
That's if you've got a crack in there that's washing stuff in, yes. Now, the other thing is the stuff they're getting out really dirt, or is it accumulated crud from the sink?
Well, he told me it was mud, and so I believed him. I mean, it's hard for me to exactly tell. Now, I did have a problem with my sewer where I had one of these, I don't know if you've heard of them, Orangeburg. And
yes.
It's in a horrible shape, and I had to have it repaired. I thought maybe the dirt could be residue from that, but I guess I need to get a plumber.
It's not impossible, but I think you're going to need a plumber to go through and find out where the blockage is.
And to repair it, just a major deal? And can I run a new line out or something like that?
Well, you can, but you're still going to have to chisel through the slab.
Right. Okay, that's what I was scared of. Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you. Over to Attica, Indiana next, line number four. Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Hi.
Question about moisture in the house. We've tried to do everything right, perimeter tile, bisqueen on the crawl space and side walls. We have a combination of old and new windows. Unfortunately, we didn't replace them all because that's what the inspector suggested. Now we have a lot of moisture on the inside of the old windows. The new windows do not have anything to mount anything. The window people say there's nothing the matter with the windows. Now I'm lost now, and I don't know what to do.
Well, you see, you don't have much condensation on the new windows.
No, very little.
Okay, and the old windows, are they single glazed with storms or what?
They are double, and the window people said something about, are they foggy? And if they're not foggy, why that window is tight? Well, I have to accept that because I didn't know anything any different.
I would suspect that you have your new windows probably are not air-filled. They're probably argon-filled between the space between the panes of glass, which is a better insulator than air.
Okay, so we're just going to have to replace them then.
Well, either that or else reduce the humidity in the house.
All right, well, I don't know what else we can do to reduce the humidity in the house. Now, we are running about 55% humidity at
That's
about
too high.
66 to 68 Fahrenheit.
55% is too high. Now, where are you getting the moisture from?
That's a good question. I'm lost. I don't know. Where would I look?
What kind of furnace do you have?
I got a new. The house is totally remodeled. It's 1969. It's been totally renovated. Kitchen, cabinets, furnace, everything.
Okay. Furnace
is in the crawl space.
You have a condensing type furnace then?
Yes.
Okay.
95% efficiency.
Okay. We hit one just yesterday or last week where the condensate was draining back into the ductwork and being re-evaporated because of a problem with the furnace.
So, well, this is supposed to be, and I think is, it exits through the drain line.
Okay, you have a drain line, and it is draining.
Yes.
Okay. Well, as I say, I think you probably just need a little bit more ventilation in the house to get rid of the moisture.
Okay.
Let your bathroom fan run all night.
Okay.
And that should pull it down.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Well, again, the lines are full, or free, and they were full. They're now free. So if somebody wants to call, you can give us a call and talk with Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. Number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. We have about 15 minutes left in the program. What's the recommendation for indoor humidity? I know your old thing is, if you get a shock when you touch the doorknob, it's too dry. If water's running down the windows, it's too wet. Okay.
That's about right.
But in terms of numbers of percent indoor humidity, what's sort of the general recommendation?
It varies with outside temperature. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons why we use these criteria, because nobody changes the setting on the humidifier every time the outdoor temperature changes. So that's why we work on that. And secondly, the humidistat that's on the wall, if it's been there for more than 6 months, is probably out of calibration because of accumulation of dust on the sensing element. So really, numbers are very deceiving, because the number continually changes. And then we have the problem of the accuracy of what's determining the number. So that's still the best criteria. If you've got water on the windows, it's too high. If you get zapped when you touch the light switch or the doorknob, it's too low.
Yeah.
And go from there.
Well, particularly, it should alert you to the fact that it's too high. If you're getting condensation on the windows on the inside, that's
If you were getting condensation on the inside of a double-glazed window, whether it's sealed double or whether it's storm window, it's too high.
Uh-huh. And basically what you're looking at is making sure that your clothes dryer is vented to the outside. You have a bathroom fan vented to the outside.
Remember, when you take a shower, the fan should run 15 minutes after you quit.
Yeah. I think probably most people are in there that they're running while they're in there, their towel off, they go out and they turn it off.
Yeah, along those lines, I recently came across a fan switch that had one button in the center where it was straight on and off. And it had four segments around the outside, so you got 15, 30, 45, and 60 minutes of operation after that.
Right. So you wouldn't really probably need to run it for an hour afterwards,
though. No, probably not.
But 15 minutes
is
good.
Right. May do wonders.
All right. St. Joe is next. Line one. Hello.
Hello. We have a house that was built in the 60s, and part of the outside walls are insulated and part of them aren't insulated. How could we build up the insulation on those outside walls that aren't insulated?
What kind of siding?
There is a brick veneer on the bottom part and a aluminum siding up on the top part.
Okay. Well, they can probably unlock a piece of aluminum
and
then blow the cavity full and then lock it back in again.
And any suggestion on the brick veneer?
Well, okay, as long as you've got a stud wall behind there, if you fill that stud wall behind the brick, that's as good as you're going to get.
I see. So could you go from the inside and fill it?
Well, you don't think you need to, because you'll be able to fill it from the, we fill a full stud cavity 8 feet high with the holes from the outside.
But if it's a tri-level and the top part happens to be aluminum and the bottom part happens to be brick veneer?
Well, if the stud spaces are continue behind the brick veneer, it all depends on whether there's a plate in between or not.
There is a plate because it's the second floor that is the aluminum and the brick veneer is...
Okay, yes, then you'll have to go in the inside.
And suggestions on how that could be done?
Generally speaking, your inside finished drywall?
Yes.
Okay, you're going to have to make a hole in the drywall, blow it full, and mud the hole back up.
Would you suggest cellulose, fiberglass, or what type of insulation?
It doesn't make a heck of a lot of difference. The cellulose is slightly more efficient than fiberglass, but not much.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
Okay, back here to Urbana, line two. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a tile asbestos in the basement that we want to remove, and they're glue so they can come, as a whole piece. So do we have to take any special precautions removing ourselves? And what about the disposal? Can I contract somebody to dispose gradually, or I have to dispose in the whole quantity?
Okay, what kind of tile?
Oh, I don't know how to describe them. They're just like, they're They're in the floor of my basement.
They're not ceramic.
Pardon?
Is it ceramic tile or a...
No, not ceramic.
Okay.
I think they have asbestos in.
Well, okay, vinyl asbestos tile or something like that. There are a couple of varieties where you use. How old is the house?
It's about, 45 years old.
That is probably asphalt tile. No, there's no great problem with that.
Oh, it's not asbestos then?
No.
Oh. So how can I tell the difference then?
Well, as I say, it really doesn't make much difference. Let's face it, asbestos is dangerous if it's inhaled. Now, I doubt very much that anything you're going to do is grind up the tile fine enough so that you can snort it.
No, we are not going to grind. We're just going to unglue it, yeah. So unglue and then so it can be disposed normally? Doesn't
yes.
have to be special disposed?
Oh. No.
Oh, that's perfect. Thank you.
All right, thank you. I'm not sure what it is that these folks are planning on doing. Would it make sense to... Well, again, I suppose it depends on what you're doing. It makes sense just to leave the old floor there and put a new floor over it if...
Depending on what you're going to put over it, it might. But otherwise, you can go in with a power scraper and peel it up, and yes, you're going to have an ungodly mess because of the adhesive that's there yet, but so on. But I really can't get excited about asbestos in floor tile because I don't think there's any way you're going to inhale it.
Okay. Not like the kind of stuff that wraps pipes.
Yeah, that's a different product completely. Yeah. But as I say, you'd have to pulverize it and snort it in order to, and I don't think people are going to do that.
Probably not. All right, let's go to Urbana and line 3, another caller. Hello.
Hello, good morning.
Yes.
If you would, please tell me about, I have an air-to-air heat pump.
Okay.
Not a groundwater coupled heat pump. And I've been curious to know, I haven't dug into the mechanics, how is it that system is... uses less electrical current than, say, just plain old resistive heat?
Well, because you are not generating the heat, you're merely moving it.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay. If you would just give us a little dissertation on that, and I'll hang up. Thank you.
All right.
Well, basically, the air-to-air heat pump works very much like an air conditioner, except it goes the other direction. We're extracting heat from the outside air and dumping it inside. In the summertime, we extract heat from the inside air and dump it outside. Now, when the temperature gets down below probably 25 degrees, there probably is not enough heat so that we then add the electric resistance heating in order to provide the backup. In some cases, we use a small gas furnace as a backup. That's the situation we have in the house that I grew up in. We've redid the heating system, and we put in an air-to-air heat pump with a gas furnace backup. And it's much more efficient to transport heat than to create it. So that's basically what we're doing. We've got an air conditioner that runs backwards.
Well, see, and I can understand the kind where you're taking advantage of the fact that the earth maintains a steady temperature.
Right.
And so you can take advantage of the fact that during the summertime it's going to be cooler than the air temperature, and during the wintertime it's going to be warmer. That I get that. I guess I'm not sure that I understand how, though, if it was, 37 degrees outside, that there would still be some opportunity to extract some heat from that air, since you're going to want the air in your house still to
if it's above absolute zero, which is minus 273 degrees, there's heat there.
Okay.
It may be very inefficient to try and get out like that, but generally speaking, if the temperature's in the 30s, it probably still working pretty well. Mm-hmm. As we go below the 30s, then we probably are going to need some auxiliary heat source to go with it. But it's still a lot more efficient. We heat when it's 40 or 50 outside, and there's enough heat in that area to heat most houses.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, if somebody wants to call real quick, we could probably get one caller in, maybe two. I don't want to promise that because we're sort of come up to the end of the time. Anything sort of general that you might just like to mention to folks?
Well, this is that time of year when you'd better be checking your furnace filter to make sure that it's still clean enough for the system to work well. we've run into several of those recently that they weren't checking very often, and we ended up, I'm sure, that we cracked the heat exchanger cracked because the furnace was overheating. It was actually running on the high limit switch because of the restricted flow through the filter.
Really? The filter can get blocked that badly?
Yes.
How long would you have to, seemingly you have to leave a filter in there an awful long time for that to happen?
Oh, not really. It all depends. All you need is a house with a two or three cats in it, and it'll happen pretty quickly.
Ah, yes, cats. Nothing but trouble. let's go to England, Illinois. One more caller here at least. Line one. Hi.
Leland, sorry.
Oh, Leland. No, oh, I'm sorry. Oh, my screen, it says England. Oh, well.
Okay.
Leland, yeah. Go ahead.
Question if he's ever put in any corn burners, and this is a new hot topic. What kind to choose from?
I do not have any information on corn burners. Generally speaking, the last time we used corn as a source of heat was in the Depression of the 1929 era. That was the last time that corn was cheaper than coal. No, I do not have any information on them. I know that, generally speaking, you can't buy one. There's a waiting list for them. It's unusual.
Yeah, there are many companies. I was at the Louisville Farm Show last week, and there were three companies there, and one of them said probably 6 months wait at least.
Yeah, that's what I've been running into. The corn burners and the wood pellet burners, we have this. And it has some advantages. There's an awful lot of heat sources. For instance, seed corn that has been treated but not planted can be burned, but you can't feed it to anything or anything like that because of the treatment on it.
Uh-huh.
So if you have a source of things like that, you can also get the fines and so on out of the corn, the cracked kernels that you put out.
Well, and for us farmers, basically it's a tax-free product. I mean, we grow it, you just take it and use it.
Yes, yes.
So it all sort of depends on, do you have a ready supply of the fuel?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
But okay. I don't have any information on the best kind to get.
Well, I looked into something for our local, my mom's house, and then I was at the Farm Bureau and the school board convention in Chicago. And got thinking, well, heat pumps versus water versus what you just talked about, air. And then I thought I'd see if you knew anything about corn.
Nope. Sorry, I can't help you.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. We, I think, are going to have to finish up for this time around with the promise that in a month, Hank will be back and we can do it again. Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He's here once a month. Always on Monday, and we talk about home maintenance. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Appreciate it.